From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Non-travel-related cases of the Zika virus have begun occurring in Florida, with 21 confirmed cases so far, primarily in Miami's Wynwood neighborhood. The number of overall confirmed infections has surpassed 400, with 57 of those involving pregnant women. We'll hear from a reporter with the Center for Investigative Reporting who recently traveled to Wynwood on assignment about her findings. We'll also learn more about local mosquito control efforts and hear from virologists here at Florida Gulf Coast University working to develop an antiviral treatment. And as Congress has gone on recess without passing a Zika funding bill, we explore the challenges of supporting efforts to track and combat the spread of the virus, as well as Governor Rick Scott's own record on funding mosquito control efforts. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. The first endemic cases of Zika in Florida have been confirmed. Congress went on vacation without voting on a Zika funding bill. The FDA has approved the experimental release of genetically modified mosquitoes in the Florida Keys to help control the population of Aedes aegypti mosquitoes that can carry the virus. Florida Gulf Coast University professors are testing mosquitoes to see if they're infected. They're also working to develop an antiviral treatment to fight Zika. Britain and Canada have advised pregnant women not to visit Florida. And Governor Rick Scott and Florida Surgeon General Dr. Celeste Phillip react. We'll discuss all that and more on today's Gulf Coast Live. We begin with the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX's public radio program Reveal, which changed its subject from last weekend's show to focus on the advance of the Zika virus. Producers rushed to finish the show sooner in the schedule because of developments in the Miami area. That's where there are now 21 homegrown cases and more than 400 travel or sexually related cases at last count. The locally transmitted cases are primarily in the Wynwood area, an artsy community just north of downtown Miami. The show, which airs on WGCU on Sundays at 3, first visited Puerto Rico, which is one of the epicenters of the disease. Reveal reporter Amy Walters then spent time in Miami, ground zero for locally transmitted cases in the United States. She reports the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has advised women who visited Wynwood after June 15th to avoid getting pregnant for 2 months. Here's what else Amy found.
Miami is ground zero for Zika in the continental U.S. At least that's what Chalmers Vasquez says.
Well, I know the mosquito that transmits Zika. It's the most highly distributed mosquito in this county. It's everywhere.
Chalmers has a pretty good grasp on the Zika situation here. He runs mosquito control for Miami-Dade. His accent's from Nicaragua, where he grew up, with mosquitoes, lots of them. He remembers the health department fighting them off when he was a kid.
I remember this for malaria. Spraying the walls of the houses with DDT at the time. I was
inside the house?
Inside, because there's malaria mosquitoes rest inside homes.
It may sound extreme, but it was actually pretty effective. Back in the 1950s, health officials also used DDT to eradicate the Aedes aegypti mosquito from Nicaragua, Ecuador, Brazil, and other Latin American countries.
Today, pesticides are used in more situations.
At the time, they were trying to stop the spread of yellow fever. But because they didn't eradicate that mosquito everywhere, including here in the U.S., it eventually came back. And now it spreads Zika and other tropical diseases, like dengue, which can be deadly, chikungunya, which causes fever and joint pain.
And they had, you know, my hometown, almost half of the population was infected with chikungunya. They do have Zika cases. They report in Zika cases in Nicaragua. In most of the Central American countries, Caribbean and South America. It's all over.
Small world, right? Now Chalmers is doing what he can to keep Zika from spreading here in the United States. In 1972, the Environmental Protection Agency banned DDT here. So armed with chemicals that are a little less damaging to the environment and less effective at killing mosquitoes, Chalmers' team of 12 mosquito inspectors plus some contractors try to keep Zika at bay. They say they're trying to hire up to 8 more, but it's a paltry team compared to nearby counties like Lee and Key West. Their staffs top 100, with a fraction of Miami's population. Each workday, Chalmers starts by pulling a fax from the health department.
See, this is what we receive from the health department on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Zika.
This is a Zika case.
This is a Zika case. All this, we have 1, 4, 5.
And these are 4 different addresses? 5 different addresses?
4 different, 5 different addresses.
Okay.
We are not supposed to provide you that, with that information.
All right, okay.
He kept that list close to his chest. It has the addresses of people the Florida Health Department has identified as having Zika. Carlos Vargas, one of the inspectors who goes out spraying.
The reason is that we need to eliminate just the potential. You know, you have mosquitoes around, and if a mosquito bites an infected person or carrying the virus, that mosquito may be the carrier now.
In early June, there was no evidence of that happening here. At the time, all confirmed cases were travel-related. In addition to the list from the health department, Chalmers responds to requests from the public. People can call in if they're worried about mosquitoes in their area. So we ended up at one of those homes, a lovely Spanish-style house in Coral Gables, a pretty upscale neighborhood.
As a matter of fact, the lady of this house, she called because she's now pregnant. So she's kind of worried about the Zika virus, which is understandable. And it's common. It's something that is very worrisome, I would say.
It rained the night before, and there's puddles of water everywhere. Carlos drops granules of insecticide into the garden pots. You can actually see the bugs hovering. Then Chalmers calls us over.
Yeah, let me show you something across the street.
Oh, yeah.
The sound you're hearing is folks doing yard work at the neighbor's house next door. Chalmers takes me up to what seems to be the most innocent thing in the world. It's a child's tiny toy wheelbarrow with maybe a couple inches of water.
Okay, don't move. Let it start feeding. Let it start feeding. You see how many of them are flying around me?
Mm-hmm. Just to let you know, mosquitoes are landing all over him. That toy's become a nursery for Aedes aegypti bugs.
So he's just eating lunch.
Yes, they're hungry. You see?
1, 2, 3, 4. You got another one on your hand right now? They're everywhere.
Yeah, this is getting full with blood. You see, it's engorging with blood. This one here on this side.
Oh, my gosh. Do you have 7 on you now?
Yeah. So hopefully they don't carry the virus.
When I was there, there were no cases of locally acquired Zika in Miami yet.
You see how bad it is? This is real bad now.
This is how these guys count mosquitoes. More and more just keep landing, puncturing his skin and sucking his blood.
So are you going to get a Zika test?
I should have been. You know, after I came back from Nicaragua, I should have been tested. I still have a chance. You see?
You actually don't know if you have Zika.
Yeah.
So Chalmers, the guy running mosquito control in Miami, is telling me he could be infected himself. But the thing is, even if Chalmers is infected right now, he probably wouldn't know it. Carlos explains.
One of the things is that up to 80% of the people that may be infected with the virus, they don't show any symptoms. So
you don't know who has it.
Exactly.
And you don't know who's spreading it. And those mosquitoes that we saw, I mean, how do you know if they have it?
You don't.
Well, we can ask them.
We can ask them. That's it right now.
All jokes aside, it really comes down to testing. Knowing which mosquitoes have the virus allows mosquito control to know where to spray. But when I visited back in June, only 8 out of 67 counties in Florida were testing. Miami-Dade wasn't one of them. Chalmers promised they'd start testing soon, and 2 weeks later, they did. Now, 28 counties in Florida are testing. But back then, when I was there, I thought, why don't I try to get some tested? I was already noticing a couple of bites.
Can you save some of these guys for me?
It's going to be hard.
I ended up with 2. I put them in a bottle cap, wrapped them up in a piece of paper, and drove away in the car. The fight against Zika in Miami gives you an idea of just how unprepared the United States is for this disease. And the thing that's so surprising, we already have a system that was designed to protect us from mosquito-borne diseases, like Zika.
Jeffrey Engel, MD. I'm the executive director of the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists.
And to explain how this system got started, he took me way back to 1999, when another mosquito-borne virus landed in the U.S.
When West Nile hit New York City in 1999, several people had already died, and it was a public health emergency as it spread rapidly over the continental United States.
The deaths got the attention of Capitol Hill, and federal funding was freed up to set up a pretty fancy computer program called ARBONET. R for arthropod, that's the kind of bug a mosquito is, BO for born, and NET for network. It tracks vector-borne illnesses transmitted by mosquitoes, but it's only as good as the data it collects. So a lot of the federal funding went to state and local mosquito surveillance.
The states had no capacity to do vector-borne work related to this threat. The fact is that the money for the West Nile virus epidemic was used to build infrastructure for all vector-borne disease threats. We hadn't even heard about Zika at the time.
You can actually pull up maps based on ARBONET data on your computer right now to follow the spread of viruses like dengue, chikungunya, and West Nile throughout the United States. It was really successful. Once ARBONET ramped up, deaths from West Nile plummeted. And that's when federal funding slowed. It went from $24 million in 2004 to $9 million in 2012. And as funding for ARBONET has gone down, the number of deaths from West Nile has climbed back up. So here's where we are right now. With all these cutbacks, there are fewer people to monitor the mosquitoes, fewer people to test them for disease, and less overall mosquito control. So this ARBONET system that relies on data is handicapped. It now has less data, so it's harder to track mosquito-borne diseases and squelch outbreaks before they take hold. But now, with the spread of Zika, one virologist, Sharon Isern, isn't willing to give up on collecting information.
If we could study how these disease outbreaks start, and if we can get a better handle on how to control them as they're starting, I think we could learn a lot of lessons on how we can handle this sort of globally on a bigger scale.
Sharon's volunteered to test Miami's mosquitoes for Zika for free.
It's just a small little sandbox, and we could study it from the beginning.
Sharon's a scientist at Florida Gulf Coast University. And in 2010, she and her husband tested the mosquitoes from the first dengue outbreak in Key West in half a century.
The mosquitoes come in, and the first thing you got to do is you have to grind them up. And this is basically a blender that can take the mosquito bodies and sort of puree them into just a little sauce. And we can then use
with Zika, Miami hadn't sent her any bugs yet. But remember those mosquitoes I got?
I brought something for you. I know Presents. That you said that and you have a contract with Miami, but they hadn't brought you any mosquitoes.
They actually brought us some?
I did. After rifling around in my purse for a minute, I unfold the paper holding my mosquitoes.
There's two Aedes aegyptis in here.
Well, these may be the key.
That's Scott Michael, Sharon's husband, who's also a virologist.
Oh, look at that. In a little...
in a bottle cap.
Water.
It was a water bottle cap. There's no soda in there.
Hey, I'm not the scientist.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
They said they'd send me the results soon. The ARBONET system wasn't just set up to collect data about mosquitoes. It also gathers information on humans infected by them. And it just so happened I noticed a couple of sizable welts swelling up on my left forearm. I got bitten by those mosquitoes the day before in Miami. There were no local transmissions, so it actually seemed unlikely that I had it. But just in case, I called up Florida Zika Hotline to see how the system works. Hi, Stan. My name's Amy Walters. Stan isn't a spokesperson, so I only recorded my end of the conversation. His response? You can't have Zika unless you've traveled outside the country. At that time, in June, there was no local transmission of Zika in Florida, so they wouldn't test me. So the next week, I got home to California, and I wasn't feeling great. I had a fever, which is a symptom of Zika. maybe a Zika on the brain, but why take chances? I tried to get it checked out by calling my own healthcare provider. Again, unless I'd been out of the continental U.S., California wouldn't test me either. Until very recently, those were the guidelines from the CDC. So why did things change? What led the CDC to update its guidelines? One proactive doctor who made the decision to test a patient who hadn't traveled. That's how the first locally acquired Zika cases were diagnosed. I asked Tom Skinner, the CDC spokesman, how it happened. The interview was a little rushed. They're a bit busy now, as you can imagine.
At the end of the day, each doctor makes the call as to whether or not they're going to test somebody for Zika virus infection. So we've put out our guidelines as to who ought to be tested, and the doctor makes a call on whether or not they're going to require a particular test be performed.
So going beyond the CDC guidelines is what revealed that mosquitoes were already in the Wynwood neighborhood of Miami, spreading the Zika virus. And in less than a week, the CDC uncovered more than a dozen cases of locally acquired Zika. That led the agency to issue an historic travel advisory, warning pregnant women and their partners to avoid Wynwood. This is the first time the CDC has told people to avoid travel to a specific place inside the continental U.S. The CDC is also recommending that anyone, male or female, who's been to Wynwood, wait at least 8 weeks before trying to conceive.
Literally, we're making these decisions on a day-by-day basis based on information that we're gathering each day.
And they are gathering information. So far, clinicians have tested over 2,300 people in Florida, and they're doing more mosquito testing, too. The bugs I took to the lab ended up coming back negative, but Zika was soon found where I'd been in Miami. Skinner says they'd be able to track Zika better if the federal government fully funded ARBONET, the system created to stop the spread of mosquito-borne diseases.
Amy Walters is a reporter for Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. She spoke with WGCU's Amy Tardiff about her experience reporting on Zika in Miami.
How scared were you that you had caught Zika?
I'm not pregnant. I wasn't actually that scared for myself. The anxiety for me was that, I mean, I live in California, so I was traveling from Florida, and then I went through Texas where I did some more reporting, and then back to California. And I have friends here who are pregnant. I'm sort of that age where a lot of my friends have kids or are getting pregnant. I know this can catch from these mosquitoes, and I didn't want to be a vector.
Are the mosquito control inspectors for Miami-Dade County worried about catching Zika since they're getting bitten by the very mosquitoes at the people's homes who have the disease?
You know, it's interesting. They deal with mosquitoes so much. And I actually heard this a few times when I was in Miami, not just from the mosquito control, but from people there, a lot of whom are from Latin America and countries where you can't fight chikungunya or dengue or now Zika. It's almost impossible. And so, you know, it's really hard to be scared when you just have to confront this every day. Miami-Dade, one of the ways they count the mosquitoes, particularly the Aedes aegypti, is by seeing how many land on them. As you probably heard in the piece, Chalmers Vasquez would stand there and count how many mosquitoes landed on him, and a lot of them would bite him. So in order to do that, they purposely don't use mosquito spray. The mosquitoes could very well bite them and potentially bite someone else.
The state put so much emphasis on the fact that we only had, at that time, confirmed travel-related cases, yet the policy was to not even test sick people who had not traveled. So how exactly was anyone going to know when the disease jumped to local transmission if we hadn't even been looking?
You know, and that was what puzzled me so much during this discovery of how they test for locally transmitted Zika. They kept telling me that they weren't going to test me if I had only been traveling in the United States. And what we've learned actually since then, now that there is a locally acquired case in Miami, or now 15 of them, possibly more, is that what it took was one person and their doctor being very proactive and actually deciding that they were going to test this person. And what's interesting now is we're in a situation
where there's trouble accessing those tests. I've heard reports that some of the doctors, you know, have a certain amount, 5-20 tests on hand, but getting all those additional tests in and then how long it takes to get the test results back and back to the CDC and then to the people. The health department in Florida says that they do have enough tests. The CDC says they're willing to give them more, but how that's getting to the actual doctors and to the patients potentially remains to be seen. It seems like there's a little bit of a hang up there.
Did you ever get tested?
No. I still haven't been tested. And to be honest, it doesn't seem very likely that that would happen right now. Now the CDC policy has changed where they're testing pregnant women. And actually, this was even before the local transmissions had occurred in Miami. The CDC policy changed so that they were assessing all pregnant women in the United States. But assessing doesn't necessarily mean testing. So some of those women, particularly more likely if they have been to an area where there's locally transmitted Zika outside of the United States or now in the Miami Wynwood area, they will more likely get a test and they're encouraging them to get a test. But for people who haven't or who aren't pregnant, that isn't the policy. They aren't pushing people to get tests. And again, there's problems getting the test. So it's not clear that that will change.
You say in your story that the fight against Zika in Miami gives you an idea of just how unprepared the U.S. is for this disease. What did you learn that makes you say that?
A lot of what I talked about was this system ARBONET. In 1999, we found ourselves completely unprepared for West Nile when that arrived. There just weren't the mosquito control personnel. There weren't people to find out the different kinds of mosquitoes. There weren't people to test the mosquitoes for different diseases that they may be bringing in, like West Nile. Once they created this system, they spent money, federal money, they sent it out to different localities and states to hire these people and to get people on the ground to actually control and monitor and survey these diseases in mosquitoes, in people, and for West Nile, it was also in animals. The amount of deaths from West Nile went down. So over time, by 2012, once there had been a significant decrease, it was not really seen as a problem anymore. And so there wasn't the funding to continue to support the system. And so now we're facing Zika now, and that funding isn't there. And then we've seen what's happened with Congress. They left for the summer recess without spending any money on Zika. So it doesn't look like any of that money will be there, despite Obama's wishes and a lot of other pregnant women's wishes to get it there until at least Labor Day when they get back in session.
Reporters always have to leave things out of the story for time. What did you learn that you just couldn't fit into your story?
It is very difficult to test these particular mosquitoes. They don't like the traps. And this is especially a problem in what we're seeing now in Florida, because Miami hasn't typically had a mosquito problem like you see there in Lee County, where you are, Fort Myers, where they've had a mosquito problem with what they call nuisance mosquitoes, just mosquitoes biting people. They also have a similar situation in Key West, and they have very robust mosquito control programs, 100-plus employees, vehicles, planes. This is not the situation in Miami. There were 14 people on staff while I was there, a handful of more other contractors. They're trying to hire more people now. But when you don't have this sort of program and these mosquitoes are really, they don't like the traps that they set for them. They don't go to the traps necessarily. They're harder to trap. It's a lot more difficult to trap them and then ultimately to test them to find this locally transmitted disease.
Thank you so much for your time, Amy.
Thank you so much. It was really great talking to you.
Amy Walters is a reporter for Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. Her story is online at revealnews.org. The program airs on WGCU-FM Sundays at 3. Amy Tardif, WGCU News.
You're listening to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. With endemic cases of the Zika virus now emerging in Florida, on today's show, we're exploring efforts to monitor and combat the spread of Zika, along with efforts to mitigate the Aedes aegypti mosquito, which can spread the virus to people through bites. In late June, the FDA approved a human clinical trial for an experimental vaccine for Zika for the first time in the U.S. It's an early step, but a significant one in the effort to combat the disease. Joining me now in studio at Florida Gulf Coast University is biology professors Drs. Sharon E. Cern and Dr. Scott Michael. Zika has been on their radar longer than many of their colleagues in the science community who are now focused on the virus, based largely on their work with the closely related virus dengue fever. They're currently testing mosquitoes for the presence of the virus. Welcome to the program.
It's good to be here.
Hi, John. Thanks for having us.
Also joining us by phone is Shelley Redivan. She's Deputy Director of Education and Communication for the Lee County Mosquito Control District. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And I invite listeners to join our conversation as well. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And I wanted to start with you, Shelley. In Amy Walter's story, one of the things she emphasized was the small size of mosquito control efforts in Miami-Dade compared to other locations like the Florida Keys and, of course, here in Lee County. Our mosquito control district has the single largest county mosquito – or it's the single largest county mosquito control operation in Florida, possibly even the entire country. Just how expansive are mosquito control efforts here in Lee County and why?
Well, we are the largest because we have the largest number of acreage that can produce salt marsh mosquitoes in the state, and we also have some of the flattest and wettest area throughout the country. We are the perfect environment for the production of any type of saltwater or freshwater flood mosquitoes, so we have both. We have inland, we have plenty of our Sarafa coming off, and then our coastline, we have salt marsh coming off. So in order to compare us, if you were to take five of your more the counties around Indian River Lagoon, if you would have to take at least five of those counties, put their budgets together, and that would give you close to what we are. And it would also take, if you added up all of their salt marsh acreage, they still wouldn't come up to the salt marsh acreage alone that we have. So we're just large because the need is so great here.
So to be clear, a lot of the efforts that go on here are mitigating, you know, mosquitoes that proliferate in the salt marsh, and those are not the same ones that are spreading the virus.
Correct. That's not the Aedes aegypti. However, there is that period where we get stability on our coastal areas and it switches to a freshwater environment and we produce large numbers of Culex nigropalpus, which can carry West Nile virus, St. Louis, Eastern Equine. So we do have some virus concerns. It's just not this particular virus on our salt marsh.
And Lee County has not yet experienced any confirmed locally acquired cases of Zika. But has the emergence of this virus here in Florida impacted local mosquito control efforts?
It definitely caught our attention when dengue became locally acquired back in 2009 down in the Florida Keys. We were rather shocked because there hadn't been a locally acquired disease such as Zika, dengue, chikungunya in Florida before. And we started making our plans right then and there on how were we going to address this particular mosquito, which is a domestic mosquito. We really had not put a lot of effort into how to control that before because it really hadn't been that large of a problem. But it was from finding out what traps actually collect them, and we had to switch the trapping methods we were using so that we could collect Aedes aegypti. We had to update our lab so that it could actually test for Zika virus. It was too outdated in order to do that. We were practicing how are you going to treat large-scale areas because we, even with the size of our program, if you were to get several suspected locally transmitted cases within Lee County, we still don't have enough manpower to actually get into those areas and cover house to house to protect them. So we're looking at how do we take the resources we have and make them work for this particular challenge. And so we have been planning since then, and we feel like what we have is probably the very best option, and we feel like it'll give us a good fighting chance to keep it from becoming locally acquired.
And we did get a question from a caller who didn't want to come on the air but was concerned about insecticides and impacts that those might have on human health.
Well, everything that we're using has been approved for first through the U.S. EPA. They are tested knowing exactly how it's going to be used, and it has everything has to have about a thousandfold safety margin that they're, before they're going to allow it to be used. And then on top of the federal review, the Florida Department of Agriculture reviews every product that we're allowed to use. It must be also approved by them. And there are some products that can be used throughout the country that Florida does not allow. So we do have these two layers reviewing every product that we would use first and deem that it is acceptable to use that in the residential areas without any extra risk.
All right. And Dr. Eastern and Dr. Michael, tell us about what's going on in your lab now. I understand you've offered free testing of mosquitoes, particularly from this hot zone, if you will, in the Miami area.
Yes. Ever since the local dengue outbreak that Shelley was talking about back in 2009, 2010, we started working with different mosquito control districts to basically help them out test the mosquitoes at that point in time for dengue. So we've had an ongoing collaboration with the Miami-Dade Mosquito Control. And so this particular year, in addition to in the past, we had tested for dengue virus and for chikungunya, they asked us to help them out with testing for Zika. And so we've been receiving mosquitoes from Miami-Dade. They do all the trapping over there, so they trap. They've been using BG Sentinel traps and send us the mosquitoes by FedEx, and we get them here at Florida Gulf Coast University and screen them for the presence of Zika virus.
And when we heard Amy Walter's story at that time, the one that she brought you before you'd started getting them officially, that one tested negative. But so has that changed?
No, that has not changed. And so we hadn't been tested previously. We were still in the dry season. So when the rainy season started and the mosquitoes started to come out, we actually started screening prior to the local transmission cases that we've seen recently. So we were keeping an eye out for it. But no, that has not yet changed from the number of mosquitoes that we've tested so far this summer.
Right. And I know from conversations we've had in the past when you were kind enough to let me visit your lab, monkey tissue can be used to grow the Zika virus. And can you tell us a little bit about our understanding of the virus's origins? It was first discovered in monkeys.
Right. So the virus was first isolated back in Uganda in 1947, and then it was identified in humans later in 1952. So the virus can be cultured in the laboratory in mosquito cells, mosquito and monkey cells as well, since it is transmitted by mosquitoes. And that's how typically we grow the virus in the lab for doing experiments in monkey cells.
It might be important to point out these monkey cells are grown in a petri dish. We don't actually take samples from monkeys. We can also grow the virus in human cells, and we do that sometimes as well.
All right. And Shelley Redivan, I know with the Lee County Mosquito Control District, there's sentinel chickens that you test for other perhaps mosquito-borne illnesses. Any possibility of maybe sentinel monkeys in the future? Would that be worthwhile?
I don't think so. I think that would be very difficult to have them set out. I think that we will probably try to stick with the way we are right now. But if there was something else that we could try that where we weren't actually going out and taking blood and leaving monkeys in residential areas, then we'd probably look at it.
Sure, understood. And, you know, despite all the work that goes into, you know, mitigating disease vector populations and developing, you know, vaccines or other treatments, is there an element of inevitability when it comes to outbreaks of mosquito-borne diseases, especially in places like where we are with the subtropical climate? Because I'm just thinking about, you know, the dengue outbreak that we saw in Florida in 2009, 2010, after more than a 70-year absence.
True. I think with globalization, there is some inevitability that you're going to have some of these viruses brought into our area, at least into the state of Florida, as I refer to our area. I really mean the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in urban areas where you have dense populations so that the movement of the virus can be facilitated much faster, amplify much faster. There is a little bit of it. What we have to do is intervene so that you can stop that virus from escalating and then from moving into any type of local mosquito, whichever one that may happen to be. We get cases of malaria coming into Lee County, and, you know, by then we're right on the anopheline mosquitoes, making sure that there's no way that that moves into the our local anopheline mosquitoes. So a lot of it just has to do with having an infrastructure in place that when something comes into your county, such as Lee, that you already know where your mosquitoes are, what you're going to be looking for, and then what your action plan would be so that it doesn't start developing into a large-scale problem.
Okay. Well, we are going to have to leave it there because we are out of time. But thank you so much to Shelley Redivan with the Lee County Mosquito Control District, along with Drs. Sharon E. Cern and Scott Michael here at Florida Gulf Coast University. Great to speak with all of you.
Thanks very much, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, more of our coverage on Zika and the fight to combat and to track the spread of the virus. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.
Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. With locally acquired cases of the Zika virus now emerging in Florida, we continue our program exploring efforts to monitor and combat the spread of the virus. Florida's first travel-related cases started in February. That's when Governor Rick Scott asked former State Surgeon General John Armstrong to declare a state of public health emergency for each county that had Zika virus present. They've been adding counties as they get more travel-related cases. We now have 32 of 67 counties with travel-related cases. The number of infections is quickly approaching 400. 57 of them are pregnant women. 21 cases have been confirmed to be locally acquired, primarily in Miami's Wynwood neighborhood. In May, Governor Scott asked Congress for funding to help the fight, but Congress went on recess without granting any. He sent a letter to the president asking for Zika protection kits and for a plan from FEMA if it became an emergency. There is still no plan. So Governor Scott has allocated more than $26 million in state funding through the Department of Health for mosquito control, departments of health, and for health education in regards to Zika. He and Florida Surgeon General Dr. Celeste Phillips spoke to the media on Friday. Let's hear from them now.
We're seeing they have lost some local retail business in that area of the state, but people are very optimistic that we're doing the right thing. The head of the CDC came to Miami. I asked for more Zika protection kits. I asked for 10,000 Zika protection kits. I asked for continued, whatever they can do to support our efforts with regard to mosquito control. 2 weeks ago, the president called and offered $5.6 million with regard to the issues we're dealing with Zika. I've been very public that that is a very good start, but both the president and Congress have got to understand this is a national and international issue, and it's not going to just impact Florida. It's going to impact our entire country, and so we need to have more support from the federal government. And then also we met with some congressional members. We met with Ileana Ross-Layton, Carlos Cabello, met with Biodius Blard, met with Senator Rubio, with the head of the CDC. We have offered at our county health departments, starting with the impacted area in Miami, but eventually all across the state, free assessment and testing for women that are pregnant in our state to give them as much comfort that we're doing the right thing. We've been working with our Department of Agriculture, with Commissioner Putnam, to make sure we're doing the right things with regard to mosquito control. We brought in some additional talent from around the state to deal with issues in Miami. We have an emergency response team from the CDC that's helping us with regard to mosquito control, how we sample, things like that. We've done about 2,400 tests so far for Zika. We've tested over 20,000 mosquitoes. We still have one mosquito in the state that we have found that is tested positive for Zika. We started aerial spraying in Miami, and that was successful in killing a lot of mosquitoes in the Wynwood area. And we'll be continuing to do aerial spraying, which we do a lot around the state, but we'll continue to do aerial spraying both for mosquitoes and larvae of mosquitoes. The things that I could ask for your support in doing, if you're in close to the Wynwood area, help the use local businesses down there, the retail businesses that might have been impacted by this. Let everybody you know that due to the precautions, no standing water, use repellent when you're outside. If you're pregnant, talk to your OBGYN. If you want to have an assessment and test, go to your county health department. To the extent you can, make sure everybody knows we're a very safe state. We need to continue our tourist industry. Hopefully we'll continue to see record tourism numbers. We have 1.2 million plus jobs tied to tourism. So it's important to us that around the world people feel that we're safe. So with that, I'll turn it over to your Surgeon General, Dr. Celeste Phillips.
Thank you, Governor, and thank you for everyone's interest in our effort to prevent and control Zika. I want to first thank the governor for his leadership in signing the executive order back in February and allowing us to be very proactive. Leading up to this point, we've had planning meetings and tabletop exercises in every county, including counties where we haven't even seen travel-related cases yet, in preparation for when we might see local transmission. Knowing that we are a state that has seen many of these similar kinds of arboviral or mosquito-borne diseases such as dengue and chikungunya, we have experience dealing with identifying and controlling local transmission. And so we're using that model as we move forward. In the past, we have seen isolated cases of dengue and chikungunya that I just mentioned. And we've learned from that, from those experiences, to know that as soon as we identify a case, and most of the time they are travel related, we immediately work with our mosquito control to go out and assess the area around where that person lives. And they will immediately look for standing water, as the governor mentioned, get rid of that, spray if necessary, do education with that homeowner and those in the surrounding areas, so that even before we have a positive test, we have begun our work to control mosquitoes in that area. We have continued that model for Zika, and considering how many travel-related cases we have, we're not surprised that we have local transmission, and we are doing all that we can to increase efforts where we still see mosquitoes are breeding perhaps in places that are hidden. And when appropriate, if we don't find any additional cases in a certain section, we can go ahead and say that there's no local transmission so that people have information regarding where their risk will be lower in that area. In Florida so far, we have investigated 3 geographic locations. In 2 cases, we found only one person who was positive after doing extensive interviewing and testing of people around that individual. In one case, we tested over 70 people, and the other over 60. That gave us enough information to say that these areas, we believe, we had one case that was isolated and no ongoing transmission. And that's typical for mosquito-borne illnesses. In the Wynwood area, we found initially 2 people that were very close in geography where they work, and then begun an investigation to test other people in those workplaces as well as in the surrounding area. And because we identified additional people who were positive, that is what led us to say that ongoing transmission is occurring here. And we identified a 1-mile area so that we would have a buffer around the central part where we know that ongoing transmission is occurring. And as we are able to say, as I said earlier, that different areas don't have any evidence of transmission, we will continue to provide that information. The emphasis on all of us doing our part so that we can protect pregnant women is really key. So that means draining standing water, covering any items outside that can collect water, and it's a very small amount. It's as little as a bottle cap or a tablespoon. And then, of course, applying repellent on clothing and skin whenever outdoors. And that includes reapplying if you are outside for a significant number of hours. Thank you.
That was Governor Rick Scott and Florida Surgeon General Dr. Celeste Philip from their address to media last Friday regarding state efforts to combat the Zika virus. We've heard Governor Rick Scott's criticism of Congress and the Obama administration for not providing support. That's because a spending package that would help pay for prevention kits for pregnant women recently died in Congress. And after that, Congress went on a 7-week break. The governor has been on the attack over this, sending out press releases and speaking with the media, demanding Congress return and get something done. But Politico Florida recently took a look back at Governor Rick Scott's own history with the state's efforts to fight mosquitoes. In an August 5th article titled "Scott Bashes Feds Over Funding But Slashed Mosquito Control Money," reporters Christine Sexton and Mark Caputo detail how Scott reduced state aid to mosquito control programs by 40% in the year after he was elected. He also cut funding for two labs that conduct research dealing with mosquito control during his first 2 years in office. One cut of $500,000 caused an already embattled facility to close and left half the state's mosquito researchers out of a job. WGCU's Topher Forges spoke with Politico Florida reporter Christine Sexton about the story and what she found.
Before we get into the past of what has been happening with mosquito control and Governor Rick Scott and budget cuts, can you tell me a little bit about what he is doing right now to address the Zika issue?
Well, Rick Scott has been vocal about the federal government needing to come in and help the state by providing some additional funding. He has been pretty aggressive about saying that this is a national issue and not something that Florida should be having to fund on its own. So I feel like a lot of what he's been doing lately is just really keeping the pressure up on the federal government to do something about helping the state. He has been pretty aggressive in terms of communicating with the state early on in this. The governor set up a Zika hotline for people to call. The Department of Health also would provide information on its homepage. I mean, I think the governor says that communication is a big part of this, and I feel like he has been a good communicator. He also has been working with the Centers for Disease Control to hold seminars or informational sessions, if you will, with Florida's healthcare professionals. And the governor did also sign an executive order freeing up $26 million for the state to spend for Zika purposes. But, you know, it's been reported that just $1.9 million of that has been spent.
And this is all in reaction to, this is happening at the same time that the federal government has been stalled and they're on break right now. So there is no Zika funding bill that's really going anywhere anytime soon.
Right. For the last couple of months, there's just been wrangling over Zika funding and how much to fund, what should be funded. The last wrinkle in the issue occurred when the Democrats did not like some language that was tagged onto a bill that dealt with Planned Parenthood funding. So they weren't going to resolve that issue, and they recessed without coming up with a funding package.
Politico ran a story not too long ago that talked about what had happened to mosquito control programs when the governor had first been elected. Can you tell me a little bit about what happened when he was first elected to those mosquito control programs?
As part of Politico Florida's coverage, Mark Caputo, the reporter who worked with me on the story, Mark Caputo and I had decided to take a look back at Rick Scott's record on mosquito funding. We've both covered him since he was elected, and we have recalled that there were some vetoes that the governor made during his first year in office. So we decided to just take a look back and see exactly what he had vetoed and, you know, what the impact of that was. So I had tracked down the $500,000 veto of the FAMU money for the lab in Panama City.
And what was the official name of the lab?
The Public Health Entomology Research and Education Lab in Panama City Beach. It had been founded in 1964, and it was simply known as the Mosquito Lab. And in its history, it had been housed in the Department of Health and Rehabilitative Services. And then Florida A&M University took the lab under its wing and made it part of the university. And what had occurred was FAMU was forced to make budget cuts, and so FAMU had decided to cut the lab from under its auspices. So the $500,000 funding would have been enough to keep the lab going for an additional year. And I had reached out to the lab to see what the result of that veto was, and that's when John Smith contacted me. And Mr. Smith was the director of the lab for 20 years. And when I interviewed him, he pretty much told me that the veto had resulted in the lab being shuttered and the loss of jobs for some scientists who worked at the lab. The lab studied, and what Smith still studies is repellent research on the mosquito that carries the Zika virus. So when I asked Mr. Smith if he felt like had the lab still been operational, if it could have been, could it be contributing to the efforts to fight Zika, you know, Mr. Smith said he definitely felt like the lab, that the lab was meaningful and could have helped with research. And so we felt like that's what made the story compelling, that this was a lab that had been there for 50 years, and the director said that they had conducted repellent research on the mosquitoes that carry Zika.
Because that's a particular challenge right now with the Aedes aegypti, the mosquito that carries the virus, or that his work could have furthered this push against the spread of Zika in the state?
Well, exactly. There are some concerns that the pesticides that they're using on the mosquitoes are not working. And so there are some concerns that, you know, they're not wiping out the population of this mosquito. And so Smith said that he felt like his research was relevant on that point. Mr. Smith felt like the program got cut because Scott wanted to show that he could cut government. He was definitely a Tallahassee outsider. A lot of people didn't think he would be governor. He ran on an anti-Obamacare platform. This was just his agenda, I guess, some people felt.
You know, when Politico Florida reached out to the governor about all this, what was his reaction?
Initially, Mark Caputo asked the governor about it while the governor was in Wynwood, and the governor really chose not to directly answer the question. And then his press office has followed up by saying that the governor has increased mosquito funding subsequently since being in office, and that it's an isolated incident that shouldn't be looked at.
Right. I saw a release that actually they put out saying that he's invested more than $13.2 million in funding for mosquito control and prevention, and it is inaccurate for some members of Congress and others to look at one or two budget decisions during a time of budget deficits when the state had to make allocations with the best return on investment when they should focus on the overall increase in investments.
It's true that the recent budget and the last several budgets have increased mosquito funding over the governor's first two budgets during his first 2 years in office. But it's worth noting that
Rick Scott did sign a budget into law that spends $2.8 million on mosquito funding. But when you take a look at what the governor actually recommended or proposed in the budget for the current fiscal year, he actually suggested that the funding should stay at $2.6 million, which is still more than the first two budgets that Scott signed into law, significantly more. So there's a recognition that those first two budgets, the funding levels were low, but the notion that funding is at an all or at least a recent high because $2.8 million has been directed, it's probably more appropriate to give that credit to the Florida legislature.
Christine, thank you for taking the time.
You're welcome.
That was Politico Florida healthcare reporter Christine Sexton speaking with WGCU's Topher Forhaz. You can read her article online at WGCUnews.org. Also, the Florida Department of Health has requested that all consumer questions continue to be directed to the state Zika virus information hotline. That number is 855-622-6735. That's all the time we have for today's show. There's more information on this and past editions of the program online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to WGCU's Topher Forhaz and Amy Tardiff. Also thanks to my producers Richard Cinqui, AJ Leonard, and Tara Callaghan. This is WGCU FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.